Today on Maine Calling, our annual Best and Overlooked Books Show. When you are reading a really good page-turner, do you exercise self-control or do you ignore obligations and stay up too late just to see what happens next? Do you find yourself daydreaming about the characters while you're at work? Well, if you recently read a book that cast a spell on you, we want to know about it. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today, Maine Calling bookworms come together to share their recommendations for some good winter reading or some good gifts for the book lover in your life. We'll hear from authors, librarians, and booksellers. And we want to hear from you. It's our annual Best and Overlooked Books show just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible by Welsh & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welshforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, strengthening Maine's coastal and island communities through education, health, and support. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. If you're a book lover, an occasional reader, or someone looking for your next great read, you are in luck. Today is our annual Best and Overlooked Book Show. So get out your pad of paper and pencil, or pen, or cell phone, and get ready to write down some new must reads. Joining me today, Kenneth C. Davis, one of our favorite guests, and a historian and author of the Don't Know Much About History series. His new book is Great Short Books, which spans genres, cultures, countries, and time to present a diverse selection of acclaimed novels, as well as a few bestsellers. Melissa Orth works in teen library services and is an online instructor at UMaine Augusta, and she is the evening circulation assistant at the Bowdoin College Library. We want you to tell us what books you are just crazy about. What did you discover this year? Share your recommendations by email, talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on social media or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. We already have the recommendations coming in on Facebook and by email and calls coming in. So be sure and hurry. Don't wait till the end. We want to hear your recommendations right away. Well, welcome back to both of you, Melissa and Kenneth. It's so great to see you both. And I'm going to start with you, Kenneth. This is such an interesting premise for a book, Great Short Books. And I understand it started because of the pandemic and you found yourself reading differently.
Absolutely right. Jennifer, always a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me again. Great Short Books. The subtitle is significant, A Year of Reading Briefly. And it was absolutely the result of the pandemic because I was doing in those early months, and by I should mention having written a book about the 1918 pandemic, which we've discussed before, More Deadly Than War, I was all too aware of what might happen. But I was doing what we're all doing, that's doom scrolling, looking at the news, both the pandemic and then the political news with this dread. So we were all anxious, nervous, depressed, sleepless. And I found I had to just get away from the doom scrolling and go back to reading a physical book. And I actually started by reading one tale a day from Boccaccio's The Decameron, famous book written in another plague. Boccaccio understood that in the midst of a pandemic, short is beautiful. From Boccaccio, I moved on to reading short novels because my attention span was still short. And I really began to discover how wonderful it was to get immersed in a short novel. And by short, I mean, usually 200 pages or less. There are a few that are a little longer and a couple that are much shorter, but all books that you could read easily within a week. And so hence, I read 58 books in the course of a year. And that's why a year of reading briefly.
Well, before we move on, I want to have you just start with one. If you were going to recommend one book that you had forgotten how wonderful it is, or a great place for someone to start with a project like yours, what would you recommend?
Well, the books are listed alphabetically, and I guess I'll just start with the very first one because I love it. It's a book called Agostino. And in my case, because you couldn't go to the library or the bookstore to get books, I really had to rely for my reading on what was on my shelf. So I went back to Agostino, which is by Alberto Moravia. It is the classic coming of age story, a 13-year-old boy spending the summer at the beach with his mother, who is widowed and somewhat wealthy and very beautiful. One can imagine her being played by Sophia Loren or maybe more contemporary Penelope Cruz. And this boy is having the mixed feelings about his mother, which really get complicated when a young man comes along and displaces him as his mother's companion in a boat ride they would take every day. So it's a wonderful book about coming of age. It's a wonderful introduction to Alberto Moravia, once the most famous Italian novelist in the world, now perhaps overlooked, which is the theme of the day. And that's one of the things I think is true of the whole series of books that I've included, great short books. Many of them are overlooked books, books we might have read a long time ago, books we might have heard of, or in some cases, books no one has ever heard of before. And that's one of the things I set out to do. Reread some so-called classics, maybe books I had been forced to read in high school that mean something very different today, but also trying to discover new writers who had never read before. And so Agostino is, because it is the first in the book, comes right to mind, but there's a wealth of wonderful, wonderful writers, 11 Nobel Prize winners, Pulitzer Prize winners. I suppose one of my other favorites when I think of Pulitzer Prize winners is the most recently written book, The Nickel Boys by Colson Whitehead, which was published in 2019. It's an absolutely searing novel based on Whitehead having learned of this cemetery that was uncovered in Florida at a boys, I suppose you would call it, reform school. And he took that actual event and turned it into this absolutely searing, riveting novel about young Black men in a prison reform school in Florida in the 1960s. So there's a little bit of everything in this book, and it ranges across the world. And there's something for everyone here.
Melissa Orth, I know your specialty, although you read everything, is young adult books. So that genre is a little bit of a misnomer, correct? Because so many adults are reading young adult novels today. So many not young adults.
This is true. Thank you for having me, Jennifer. The first book I'm going to talk about is one of those books that was marketed to teens, but really can be read by adults. In fact, the main character is 18 years old, but the setting is what's making this book unusual. It takes place in 1758 Joseon Dynasty in Korea, and it will appeal to adults because it is a mystery. We meet Hyeon, a palace nurse, who is called on the opening pages of the book to treat with the royal physician, the crown prince of Korea. And while she is there spending the night just handing the doctor the items he needs, back at the medical office she had basically learned how to be a nurse at, there's a massacre going on. And so when something happens while she's helping the physician, and she looks up and she realizes that the crown prince sitting in the bed that they are treating is not actually the crown prince, that starts her on her own detective work, using her medical knowledge, the help of a friend who's in the police force at the palace grounds, and trying to win favor with her father to solve this mystery. It's fantastic. It's by June Hur. Her last name is spelled H-U-R, and all of her books are mysteries set in the past in Korea.
That's a good one. Okay, Kenneth, your turn for one more.
Well, I'm going to give you a book that you've probably heard of, and I think that it's overlooked because, just as Melissa was talking about YA books, there are children's books that tend to get overlooked. And you've probably heard of this one. It was written by a guy who lived in Maine. His name is E.B. White. Charlotte's Web is in great short books, and people will say, but wait a minute, that's a children's book. To me, it is a perfect book, and that's why I included it in great short books. It is a book that addresses all of the big themes of great literature: love, friendship, sacrifice. And I reread Charlotte's Web, I would say, almost every year. Sometimes we read it aloud. Of course, if you only remember it from having read it yourself as a child or maybe reading it to your children, I would say, please go back and read it again. I weep every time I read Charlotte's Web, which, of course, begins with one of the great lines in literature. And I think great lines of first lines are really important in great short books. But in that one, it is, where's Papa going with that axe? Very, very hard to skip past that. Just in terms of a book that's not in great short books, but I think is really kind of fits into the theme here today, and this was published in 2022. It's interesting because a New York City bookshop called McNally Jackson has embarked on its own publishing program, and they are producing a series of books that are being brought back into print that they feel have been forgotten or overlooked and shouldn't be. And one of them is called The Oppermans, and it was published in the 1930s. It's about Jews in Germany before, just as the rise of Hitler is coming. And it is an extraordinary book and should not be overlooked. So, The Oppermans by, I might be mangling his name, Leon Feuchtwanger is the author's name. It's available now in a paperback. It's a beautiful book, very important book. And he begins the book, by the way, with a quote from Goethe. There is nothing the rabble fears more than intelligence. If they understood what is truly terrifying, they would fear ignorance. And Jennifer, if I could, I don't want to overwhelm you with things. One of the great pleasures in my life was sitting in the studio with you 6 years ago and meeting Ashley Bryan. We were interviewed together. You may not remember, but I certainly do.
I remember.
And I had the good fortune to go recently to the Morgan Library here in New York. They're having a display of Ashley Bryan's work. Of course, Ashley Bryan passed away. And so two of his books, I think, are also somewhat overlooked. They were not familiar to me. And I saw the artwork there in the Morgan Museum. One is called Sail Away, which is based on the poetry of Langston Hughes. And one is called Infinite Hope, which is really more of Ashley Bryan's autobiography. So again, I'm throwing some main authors out there, E.B. White and Ashley Bryan, they are overlooked. Not really, but shouldn't be.
All right. And I do need to mention that our executive producer, Jonathan Smith, is busily writing down all of the recommendations made today, and a list will be coming out. So if you're driving, please do not try to jot these down, and know that we'll try to get spellings correct and try to get everything down. Melissa Orth, you know, Ken made a really good point, and we're reminded of this when we do the Maine Public All Books Considered Book Club, is that as far as Maine authors go, whether we're talking about E.B. White or others, it's really an embarrassment of riches here. This state has produced just a few more than you might think in percentage odds. Odds are that if it's a Maine author, it's a pretty remarkable book.
This is true. We are very lucky. I do work in Brunswick at Bowdoin College, of course, and Brunswick itself has at least 4, 5, 6, 7 fiction writers for children, picture book writers, science writers. We are very wealthy with authors and illustrators in Brunswick alone. So imagine the rest of the state.
Sure, very lucky. And Uncle Tom's Cabin was written in Brunswick by Harriet Beecher Stowe. Yes. Right. So Melissa, that's one right. More recommendation before we go to our callers.
Sure, absolutely. Mine is the absolute opposite of Ken's recommendations, where he has some very wonderful but serious topic recommendations. This one is for children. It is a graphic novel that is sweet as sweet can be. In fact, the title is Marshmallow in Jordan. It's by Alina Chow. And It is about a young woman living in Indonesia. She had an accident 3 years ago, and now she is in a wheelchair. And she was the star of her basketball team, but now she can't really play except be a coach from the sidelines. And one day, as she's coming home from school, she meets a white elephant who is hurt in the playground. And this elephant becomes her best friend and helps her see that she doesn't need to play basketball to continue with her sports. She can also join the water polo team. And even though it's sweet and it sounds very saccharine, it's not at all. It's got some friend drama. It has this mystery of where did the elephant come from? We have climate change going on in the background where Indonesia is facing a drought and it's stressing everybody out. And yet at the center of the story is a beautiful friendship of this girl and the elephant. And there are even hearts on the pad of the elephant's feet. I'm trying to see if I can get this on the screen, even though people on radio can't see, but it's just really lovely, really lovely illustrations by Alina Chow. And Alina Chow was an animator for Star Wars, The Clone Wars. So this is a very different artwork for her.
We are going to take a quick break. After that break, we're going to get some of your suggestions. But first, I want to mention our upcoming Maine Public All Books Considered Book Club event. It is on Thursday, December 15th at 7 p.m., my colleague Cindy Hahn will be hosting, and we will be talking with author Gigi Georges about her book, Down East, Five Maine Girls and the Unseen Story of Rural America. Also, we're choosing the books for our 2023 book club. So send your suggestions of books by Maine authors by email to fun@mainepublic.org. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Get ready to add to your to-read list. Today is our annual Best and Overlooked Books show. Joining me, Melissa Orth and Kenneth C. Davis. Melissa works at UMaine Augusta in the Teen Library Services and Online Instruction, and also is a circulation assistant at Bowdoin College's library. You know Ken from his Don't Know Much About History series, and his new book is Great Short Books, A Year of Reading Briefly. Join our conversation. Give us some recommendations. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can comment on social media or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. An email here from Lynn. My husband and I have been big fans of May B. Davidson ever since we moved to Bristol in 2006. Her column in the Lincoln County News was always beautifully written and evocative of her love of the Midcoast. It was entitled Lower Round Pond, although it began for us as No Longer Lower Round Pond before she moved back to the village. When she wrote Whatever It Takes about her life with her husband Jim on Greenland Cove and beyond, we were entranced. But this year we read Salt and Roses, a series of vignettes and reminiscences. It is an especially sweet offering because this year May passed away at the age of nearly 93. So both books from Island Port Press. We're going to go to Robert, who's calling from Orono. Hi, Robert.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I guess I'm in the mortifying position of having to tout my own book, which is why I'm calling. I just recently published a memoir, which is, I think, very timely since it deals with Ukraine. I'm in the interesting position of being the single father of two sons, one from Russia and one from Ukraine. And I'm happy to say they get along with each other. And I just published a memoir called Adopting Anton, A Single Man Seeks His Son in Ukraine. And so that's what I have right now.
Congratulations, Robert. Did you raise the boys here in Maine?
Yes, I did. I brought them both to Maine. And actually, when my older son, Alosha, when I adopted him in the 90s, I actually wrote a memoir about him. What I didn't know was that the younger boy, Anton, for years was carrying around a regret that I had not written a book about him. And of course, it's not easy to simply produce a book, but serendipitously, I did, and I actually found a publisher for the book. And so both boys are equally satisfied now. Each has his own memoir detailing the the adventure, I'd say, and the struggle of traveling through Eastern Europe, dealing with very, very different cultures that perceived things like authority in different ways. And yet, in the end, you know, coming out, you know, successfully. As you know, now it's impossible for Americans to adopt from Russia, and Ukraine is at war. So I feel like I got the brass ring twice before things became impossible in that part of the world.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, congratulations, Robert. And we should say that your last name is Close, Klose, Kenneth.
Really interesting to hear. And of course, there are always millions of stories. As a historian, I always believed when writing about history that we have to get away from dates and battles and speeches and tell real stories of real people. And this is a perfect example of that. One of the things that I learned a great deal about as I was writing great short books is the lives of the authors that I wrote about. We tend to think of authors as, you know, sitting in rooms alone, maybe quietly trying to figure out what they're going to write about. But all of the writers that I've included, almost all of them, led extraordinary and often very painful, difficult lives. But you can't escape from reflecting on how the lives of these authors influenced their writing. And in all of these cases, of course, their fiction. So the idea of memoir, the idea of personality, the idea of what I've lived through is so important to great literature, whether it's fiction or nonfiction. And it's one of the things I tried to emphasize in talking about these great short books, that behind them is a writer and behind each of those writers is a story.
Robert Close, Klose, in his new book, Adopting Anton. Thank you so much for calling in. We'll go to Tennant's Harbor and Catherine. Hi, Catherine. Go ahead.
Hi. I am calling to recommend my favorite book of the year by a Maine resident, Midcoast Maine resident, Bowden grad, who is widely read throughout Europe. In fact, he was invited by Macron to join him for dinner tonight at the White House, but you can't find him in any Maine bookstores. The book is called The Moment. The author is Douglas Kennedy. They are novels that include historic fiction, romance, and mystery, and they're fabulous.
Well, thank you for that recommendation, Catherine. Thanks for calling in. Allison on Facebook writes, Fossil Men by Kermit Pattison traces the discovery of Ardy and how it fits into the story of human evolution. It is fun, raucous, and educational. No dry bones history here. We will go to Arlene calling from Cumberland. Hi, Arlene, and tell us about your recommendations.
Well, I have one, a new book this year by a, I think this is her first novel, though I believe she's written before. It's called Soft Features by Gillian Burns. And I just thought it was a really interesting and poignant and often humorous fictional story. It's about a woman named Coralie who happens to be a reporter for WMPR, which is Maine Public Radio. And it's set in mid-1990s. And it follows Coralie through her daily life and the processes of researching, interviewing, developing, editing, and recording her stories for the radio, which I find very interesting because I've listened to radio my entire life and a lot of NPR and also Maine Calling and Maine Public. And I particularly enjoy the details that she gives about Coralie's relationship to her work colleagues, some of it's political, her family, and all the individual people that she meets and interviews for her stories. There are some references to real people, though this is fictional, but she does, you know, real references to Maine and some of the NPR national people you'd probably everybody readers would recognize. And one of the, and she also has some underlying themes, and one of those are she's struggling with, since she's a reporter and does all these stories, she's not able to forget all the bad things she sees as a reporter. And at one point she says, normal human beings always remember the bad things so much out of proportion, at least for her, to the good things and the neutral things. So much of the time, nothing bad is happening and things are good or fine or neutral. And, you know, just remember to focus on some of those instead of just a lot of the bad things. And I know she and one of her colleagues want to do a show where they ask people, what's something you have now that you wanted for a long time? And I thought that's a good way to remember that you do have something, hope, or something that's going on good in your life.
Arlene, you'll be happy to know that that Delia also called to recommend this book, Soft Features. And it's so interesting what you said about the toll that reporting can take. I remember having Anne Garrels on this program and talking about all that she had seen covering wars over the years and what a toll it had taken on her in her life. And we lost Anne this past year. So thank you so much for calling in, Arlene, and with that recommendation. A tweet from Jim, please mention Fairy Tale by Stephen King. He is the master of horror, but this book proves that his fantasy is sublime. Melissa Orth, teenagers and college students, is fantasy still pretty much the number one genre?
Absolutely. It's still really, really hot. And a lot of the Bowdoin students get frustrated that they don't have access to fiction because they don't know how to find it in the LC category of PS, PR, PQ. So they are often requesting books down at the local library. And I'd say fantasy is definitely number one.
And you include Stephen King, Kenneth.
Stephen King is included in great short books, and perhaps a bit of a surprise, again, not in the typical Stephen King genre, but it's one of my favorites, also as a film, of course. The title of the novella is Rita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption, and a highly realistic book from Stephen King, of course, about a man being unjustly sent to prison, and made one of those rare cases of a great film made from a great book. So Stephen King is indeed in there. And I should also mention that everyone is perhaps familiar with Castle Rock, the Stephen King's company that he uses. That name comes from another book in Great Short Books, which is Lord of the Flies. And Stephen King had actually written an introduction to a recent anniversary edition of Lord of the Flies and mentions Castle Rock, but that's where. So two connections there for in Great Short Books, Castle Rock, Lord of the Flies, and Rita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption.
Susan on Facebook has a few recommendations for us. Share a Me and Major Whittlesey by Kathleen Rooney. Horse by Geraldine Brooks. The Latecomer by Jean Hanif Korolitz, Lessons in Chemistry by Bonnie Garmus, and Mary Jane by Jessica Anya Blau. And another person, an emailer, Amy, also recommends Chemistry Lessons by Bonnie Garmus and writes, Elizabeth Zott, a chemist in 1960s California, treated unfairly by her male co-workers at Hastings Research Institute, leaves her job and finds herself the reluctant star of America's most beloved cooking show, Supper at St. Elizabeth's, with an unusual approach to cooking. Quote, combine one tablespoon acetic acid with a pinch of sodium chloride. Proves revolutionary. So two recommendations on the same book. Melissa, I also know that Horse by Geraldine Brooks has been a very popular book this year. Is that one you're familiar with?
It is not. I don't read horror. I don't watch horror.
Oh, no, Horse.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I thought I heard horror.
Sorry.
No, I actually haven't. I rarely get a chance to read adult books. So when I do, they tend to be nonfiction.
We'll move to Ellen, calling from Florida, but also lives in New Gloucester. Hi, Ellen. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to be blowing my own horn.
Actually, Ellen, now I'm not hearing you quite as well. Are you on speakerphone by chance?
I am. I'll get off speakerphone.
Okay, great.
No, I'm actually not on speakerphone anymore. Should I just go onto iPhone?
Yeah, just go ahead and talk. That's fine.
How's that? Is that better?
No, it's worse. Why don't you go back to where you were and just tell us briefly your comment. Thank you.
Oh, okay. I'm going to be recommending a new mystery series that I have written. Both books 1 and 2 came out this year. The first one, the name of the series is The Jerusalem Mysteries, and they're all set in the city of Jerusalem. The first book that came out in May is called The Deadly Scrolls, and it focuses on the Dead Sea Scrolls and a murder mystery, a lost scroll, and a treasure map. And the second book, which came out the day before yesterday, is called The Hyena Murders. Both star my maverick intelligence officer, Maya Rimon, the woman, a single mom, as a matter of fact, and they both focus on adventures in Jerusalem, and Jerusalem itself is the main character of both books. And the second book focuses on the Ethiopian Jewish community in Israel, which is very exotic and not well known by people who are outside of that community.
Ellen, tell us your last name.
Ellen Frankel, F-R-A-N-K-E-L.
All right. Well, congratulations and thanks for calling in today. So many recommendations coming in. Here's an email from Serene. Best book of the year, An Immense World, How Animal Senses Reveal the Hidden Realms Around Us by Ed Jong. A course in itself, great writing, helps one see the life around us with new and needed understanding. Ken, you've read that?
I haven't read that, but I've read so much about it, and I know his writing from, I believe, The Atlantic very well, and a wonderful writer who's been also writing a great deal about the pandemic. I just want to jump in, Jennifer, with one thought before we get too far along and we run out of time. One of the things we haven't discussed at all, and I think Melissa would be very, very familiar with this issue, is the question of what's happening with books right now, especially books in schools, perhaps maybe not in Maine so much, but around the rest of the country. This issue of book banning, book censorship, removing very, very important literature that has been selected very carefully by curated librarians who are curators. This is a danger. It's a danger to our democracy. One thing I know, as having written about dictators, is that one of the first things they do is come for the writers. They come for the books. And of course, Hitler had book burnings in Berlin. And there's a quote there in Berlin at the site of that book burning, which is, where they burn books, they will eventually also burn people. So I think that this issue is really, really important right now. Books are essential to the preservation of democracy. During World War II, Franklin D. Roosevelt said, books are weapons in the war of ideas. We are in the midst of a war of ideas right now. And it's really important to push back against these efforts to remove books because someone doesn't like that idea. Books open up people, books change societies. And so this is a really important issue. And I'm seeing Melissa nod her head. So I'm going to let her jump in here. Many of the writers included in Great Short Books, more than half of these 58 writers have had books banned, censored, suppressed. Nowadays, we would consider some of them classics. Some of them had their books burned, like Thomas Mann and Hemingway. And Edna O'Brien, whose parish priest burned her book, The Country Girls, in her native Ireland. So this is a real issue for the moment, that we cannot allow the forces that would destroy our freedom to read gain the upper hand.
Melissa. Absolutely. I think, Ken, you said it perfectly. We're seeing targeted books by specific titles. We're seeing broad subjects that are being any book that deals with an LGBTQ or trans topic is targeted, and it's not just teen books, it's kids books, it's adult books, it's a broad range, and it's very hard to explain to the upcoming trained librarians that you need to be brave. You know, you're taught to buy books that will reflect your community, but you also need to be brave. And even though if a book will not go with the majority of your community, you have to have the book available for the invisible population of your community, whether that be somebody who is, you know, is BIPOC or LGBTQ or has a disability, like the book I had mentioned earlier, Marshmallow and Jordan. Go ahead, Ken.
Just one more point to this, because I do think it's such a critical issue in our time. There's nothing new about book banning, of course. In the 1830s, abolitionist literature was banned in places like South Carolina, where they actually burned tracts, and Andrew Jackson had such things banned from the mails. We have a history of this. During the 1950s, sounds amusing, but in Indiana, someone wanted to get rid of all the school books that mentioned Robin Hood. Why? Robin Hood stole from the rich and gave to the poor. That was socialism. That was part of McCarthyism. And McCarthy had people, including the attorney Roy Cohn, go into libraries across the world, U.S. libraries, and pull books out of the libraries. And it was the Librarians of America, the American Library Association, that announced in 1953 its first Freedom to Read statement, which has been updated many times since. So librarians really do stand at the front lines of our defending this very, very fundamental right to read. It's not a matter of a sexy scene or a dirty word or bare breasts and mouse, cartoon bare breasts. It's really about the fear of ideas. People want to keep power, and they think that suppressing these ideas will help them keep power. And it's an issue that I'm fairly passionate about, as you can tell.
Well, we do need to take a quick break. When we come back, more of your recommendations. This is Maine Calling. For Rooks, you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the best and overlooked books of 2022 and before. With me, Kenneth C. Davis, the author of the Don't Know Much About History series. His new book is Great Short Books. Melissa Orth is a teen librarian and instructor at UMaine Augusta. She also works at the Bowdoin College Library. If you would like to recommend some books, we have a few minutes left. You can call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. An email here from Margaret. I don't want people to forget the existence of A Maine Hamlet by Lyra Beam, surely one of the great Maine books. Also, Books for Children by one of my very favorite authors, Barbara O'Connor. Melissa Orth, you want to throw out a couple more wonderful Maine children's book authors' names?
Yes. Kate Egan of Brunswick has a new book called Golden Ticket. It is about a young woman who she's in the gifted and talented class, and she doesn't feel like she belongs there. So she's going to do something she really shouldn't. So there are a few books out there about bad choices, and this one's a very good one. I don't have any picture books off the top of my head because I'm not quite in tune with that, but that's one that comes to the top.
We'll go to Judy from Biddeford. Hi, Judy. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Good to connect with you. One book that I loved in this year was by Ada Calhoun. It's called Also a Poet, Frank O'Hara, My Father, and Me. And it's just beautifully written. Her father was Peter Sheldahl. He was an art critic for the New Yorker magazine. And she grew up in a sort of the St. Mark's region of New York in the, I believe, later 60s, 70s, and 80s. And it was not an easy place, especially for a teen to grow up. But her father was he was a brilliant and rather complicated man, a wonderful writer. And she never really could relate to him until later on in her life, where she realized they shared a love of the same poet, who was Frank O'Hara. And she came really to a closer understanding of who her father was, and they had a great deal of collaboration and love that they were able to share the last couple of years.
So that's Ada Calhoun's Also a Poet.
Right. Frank O'Hara, My Father, and Me.
Wow. Well, thank you, Judy, for your call. I appreciate it. Let's see here. We have an email. We have so many coming in. An email here from Ruth. Have just finished A Whisper in the Dark by Louisa May Alcott, a collection of her short stories, which have recently been published. Also, The Big Wave by Pearl Buck. Another YA is Rascal by Sterling North. Would also like to recommend a Maine author, Betty Culley. Her books are Three Things I Know Are True, Down from Space, and The Genius of Ants. These are all YA, but are all thoroughly enjoyable. So thank you, Ruth, for that recommendation. I want to talk to you just a minute, Kenneth, about your books that were chosen, because as she mentions Pearl Buck, it makes me think that that might be the kind of book that is in your next book of great short reads, great short books.
Well, of course, when I had to narrow it down to 58, I had to exclude a great many books, including some of my own personal favorites. And I did do that. Pearl S. Buck is, I guess, would fall into that category of maybe semi-forgotten authors these days, and ended up, I believe, in her life in Vermont. So, you know, one of the things that gets overlooked is that we get caught up in what's published this year, and we tend to forget about some of the great things of the past. In fact, the oldest book in my collection, in the Great Short Books collection, was written in 1759, and I had never read it. It is Candide, or Optimism, by Voltaire, and it is the freshest, funniest, and most lively writing you can imagine. It could have been written a couple of weeks ago, I think. I call it Voltaire's Kurt Vonnegut with a powdered wig. It's funny, it's fresh, it's satirical. He skewered every single, speaking of a censored writer, his books were burned in Paris in the 1700s. So Voltaire is, again, one of those older writers that is very alive, and we should always go back and reconsider some of those so-called classics, which Mark Twain said is a people praise but never read.
An email from Wally. I just finished reading Bill Rohrbach's latest book, Lucky Turtle. Another book I discovered is a memoir by Catherine Butler Hathaway. When she was 5, she fell victim to spinal tuberculosis. For 10 years, she was strapped to a board, supposedly to prevent a humpback and dwarfism. At the age of 15, she was released and had to learn to walk again. The book is The Little Locksmith. She bought a house in Castine and became a Maine writer. And Wally's comment, Melissa, reminds me of what you said about the young book, the book about the girl in the wheelchair and the elephant, is that books are a place that teach us empathy.
Exactly. They help us see ourselves in the books, or they help you find a friend. They can serve so many different purposes that are good to the soul.
An email from Lauren. Shout out to Judy Batchelder of Brunswick, whose Here First Samoset and the Wawanak of Pemaquid, Maine, was published by Down East Books in August of 2022. Having grown up in New Harbor, Judy's curiosity about Samoset of Pemaquid and his remarkable arrival in Plymouth in 1621 leads to a meticulously researched and engaging story. A great gift for Maine history lovers. Kenneth, that sounds like it's right up your alley.
Oh, it absolutely sounds like it's up my alley. You know, we just had Thanksgiving, and I usually talk a good deal on the radio about Thanksgiving history. And of course, we have this narrative that we have learned since we were children of these Native Americans who show up and magically speak English. And how do they do that? Of course, there had been Englishmen and other Europeans sailing up and down the coast of New England for a long time before the Pilgrims arrived. And the more famous of the two Native Americans, known as Squanto, had actually been taken prisoner and enslaved by an English sea captain, taken to Spain first, made his way to London. So no fiction actually is more extraordinary than history sometimes. And that's why I always say story is the way to really get people fascinated, interested in history. And a lot of the novels that I've included in Great Short Books are not specifically historical novels, but you cannot read them without understanding the history in which they were written. Anything from Animal Farm by George Orwell, of course, which is an allegory of Stalin taking over the Soviet Union, or to One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich by Alexander Solzhenitsyn, which expresses and records his experiences being in a Stalinist labor camp. And it's one of the great books of the 20th century. And Solzhenitsyn has to be counted as one of the most important figures of the 20th century because of books like that.
We'll go to Lawton calling from Penobscot. Hi, Lawton. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for the show today. Two main authors, one Gail Goutrot, who passed away actually about 5 years ago, but she had a shop in Bar Harbor for years called Boston Baked Beans. It was kind of an eclectic shop. And when she retired, she was looking for public service work. She went to Cambodia and worked in an AIDS orphanage in the early days of the AIDS epidemic before the antiviral drugs, so a lot of children were dying. And it was run by a Vietnam vet. So her name is Gail Goutrot, and the book is A Rocket Made of Ice. And the way that title came about was she was at the orphanage one day talking to a young kid, and he said, couldn't you take a rocket ship to the sun? And she said, it's very hot. And he said, what if you had a rocket ship made of ice? But basically, this orphanage is now turned into a family because of the HIV drugs. Gail donated a bunch of money to Jackson Labs for cancer research, and also I think the benefits of the book now go to the orphanage called Wat O Phat, which is in Cambodia. And the other one is Rob McCall, the other author. Rob was a minister in the Blue Hill Peninsula for years. He wrote the Aboriginal Almanac, which appeared in the weekly packet for probably 20-odd years. And he's written three books. The Almanac, which is about, he used to climb Blue Hill Mountain every day. And Aboriginal is an indigenous name for Blue Hill Mountain.
Great. Well, Lawton, thank you so much.
Rob is at the end of his life right now.
I'm sorry. And Lawton, thank you so much for calling in with those recommendations. And we'll make sure that they are on our list. Just a couple minutes left. And we have a call here from Jabron Graham, who is the owner of the Briar Patch in Bangor. Jabron, thanks so much for giving us a call.
You're welcome.
We just have a couple minutes. If you would like to first tell us what have been the most popular books among your customers, but then also what are some of your staff's favorite reads of 2022?
Sure, absolutely. Maine authors are, you know, they just rise above everything else with our customers. Our number one books sold this year have been Night of the Living Res by Morgan Talty, Dawn in the Dooryard by Tim Cotton, Chris Van Dusen's picture books. He had two that came out this year. Those have been really the top books that our customers have flocked to all year long. In addition to, the yearly Stephen King title, this year being Fairy Tale, we sold, tons of copies of that one, more so than any other Stephen King, I think, on release this year. I think it had a lot to do with a lot of Stephen King tourism coming into the state. And when you are in Bangor, the thing to do is buy a Stephen King book, I guess. So another great title that has resonated with our customers has been Breaking Bread, the book of essays collected by Joy Corey and Deborah Spark that feature Maine and other New England authors that was a benefit for the Blue Angel organization.
Beautiful book.
Yeah, absolutely. And as far as staff favorites, we've had a really eclectic group of booksellers this year that have, really just taken on a lot of great books. Everything from another Maine author, Jillian French's new book, Sugaring Off, which came out this past month. That's a young adult book. Also in the young adult line of, Captain Jammer by Francesca Zappia, and Lee Bardugo's Grisha Verse graphic novel, Demon in the Wood, also a big favorite among the staff here. Celeste Ng's newest book, Our Missing Hearts, that was a favorite. And two of my favorites this year were Sea of Tranquility by Emily St. John Mandel and How High We Go in the Dark, the debut from Sequoia Nagamatsu. Both of those books have been something that I've been hand-selling all year long.
Thank you so much for calling in. Jabron is owner of the Briar Patch Bookstore in Bangor. We'll have his recommendations on our list, as well as a bookseller who was not able to call in, Heidi from Bogan Books in Presque Isle. Too busy today, but we'll definitely be publishing her list on our list of best and overlooked books. I'm so glad that we mentioned Night of the Living Res. That Maine book has gotten so much national attention. It was a Maine Public All Books Considered book club pick, and just so excited for Morgan Talty. I want to thank both of you, Melissa Orth, Kenneth C. Davis, for being a part of the show today. We never have enough time to talk about all the books. So if you sent in an email or you posted something on Facebook, do know that will make it onto the list, even if it didn't make it on the air today. And also, if you have suggestions for next year's Maine Public All Books Considered Book Club authors or books, please send those to fun@mainepublic.org. Our guest today, Melissa Orth with Teen Library Services at UMaine Augusta and Bowdoin College Library, and Kenneth C. Davis. His new book is Great Short Books, A Year of Reading Briefly. Today's sound engineer, KG Akimoladun. Maine Calling produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. You can find our weekly newsletter at mainecalling.org. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.